Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Kirk Gray.
Hey, Kirk. In your reliability work and stuff, have you worked with suppliers at one point or another?
Very much so. I've been to China and seen the suppliers and walked the lines of suppliers and discussed.
I drove up to one of them. It was a problem child that had contamination. And we were trying to figure out where this is coming from. And and it looked like, you know, a pretty good mixture of dust and debris type stuff all over it, our boards, and they caused problems. And so I flew to Korea, and in the morning I'm getting a taxi out to the plant, and they had a gravel loading dock. The base for their loading dock vehicles and stuff was that. So my cab's pulling up to that side of the building. And when he stops, this big cloud of dust went right onto all these bare boards sitting on the dock. I got a picture of where this contamination going. So I got out and told him, when you fix this, then call me again and we'll check it. Right. But don't ship us anything, because none of these boards are going to ever work. And I'm not going to waste your time. Go fix this. And they were claiming they didn't have room and it was just buffering. It's a short term. I says, my taxi just contaminated $20,000 worth of circuit board sitting there. So you're not, you know, fix this. And so I went back to the hotel, booked my flight back home.
I was
on site for short visits.
Yeah. It's like the story of a guy who knows where to hit the machine to get it to work, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, or to put the pencil mark, things like that.
I wish I could have charged as much as he did, but but the idea was is that, and I had this the other day, is like people tend to believe or want to believe that their suppliers have them in their best interest, that they're going to create this op amp or they're going to create this widget or this microprocessor such that it'll work in your environment. And I said, no, stop right there.
Yeah.
They don't know where you're using this.
Right.
There's no way. They're making, I worked with a diode company once, or a ferrite. It was, what were they making? It wasn't diodes. It was wire round.
Ferrite beads that put around to decrease AMI?
Oh, no, not the beads. It was a, I'm drawing a complete blank on the name of it, but it was a real small wire round, and it was around a magnet.
Yeah. An inductor?
Inductors. That's what it is. Thanks, inductor. And
there's capacitors, inductors. Okay.
And I said, how do you design these for like the auto industry or for this one? I was like, we have no idea. It's a catalog item. If you want an inductance of this month, you know, get this one. And do you do anything different for space or military? He says, no, everything's off the shelf. If you want an inductor from us, and this is why you do that. And he says, the computer industry, this time it was, you know, like HP and Intel and Dell and others were buying so many inductors for their motherboards that everybody else was noise. And so they said, our biggest customers are the computers. Yeah, what about hard drives? Oh, yeah, but we don't worry about that because that's, you know, that's their fault if they put ours in there and it doesn't work. They had no ideas. They said, do you ever get one that goes into satellite? Oh, I'm sure they're in satellites. They're in cell phones. They're in here. They're, you know, like, okay.
They don't know that. They can't keep track of all the applications, especially the small component suppliers we talked about.
And they're not being bought by the customer. You know, like the end product, the plate name, they're being bought by the contract manufacturer that's building it. So they're sending reels of 10,000.
For
Foxconn, and they build the circuit boards.
It's up to Foxconn then to trust their suppliers. And in fact, the suppliers say, for instance, a plastic encapsulated microcircuit has got, you know, a supplier to the wire. Sometimes some of them, I guess, are vertically integrated or controlled. You know, the company controls every part of the process, from stamping the wireframe or the lead frame or whatever. And then there's the epoxies for encapsulation, which are critical in their expansion, their thermal coefficient of expansion, and the formulas are critical and are usually proprietary, and they may be supplied by somebody else. We've talked about electrolytic capacitors and the electrolyte, whether mm-hmm. that was maybe supplied by another chemical company or whether it was controlled by the, you know, a Nichicon or whoever the capacitor maker was. They've got, you know, it's a long chain of suppliers, and you don't know after maybe your first one, Toshiba, that you buy the diodes from, how Toshiba controls their suppliers, you know, the raw materials that are put into these things.
And we've both seen, you know, supplier audits and supplier selection processes that say, well, how do you manage your incoming materials? What kind of requirements do you flow through to them? And there's some talk about that, usually in a conference room with nicely prepared slides. And then you walk out on the floor and realize that there's a load of, you know, that was a fairy
tale. They're selling you something, right? They're selling you what the fact that they really may or may not be doing this and may only do this when a certain failure rate occurs in certain products with one of their bigger suppliers. Like, that was what's great about working for Dell. They would respond. They would answer your questions, and you had weight. Whereas your little supplier, like a one component supplier that made voltage control oscillators I worked for, they got a reel of, you know, maybe a thousand of their Baractor diodes were failed. So are they going to react to, is Toshiba going to react to a little company that makes maybe $1 million in sales a year? No, not at all. They don't get,
that's a subject for another episode. How do you do that? It's not based on volume. You don't have a dedicated project manager for your company and stuff like that yet. If that company is worth their salt, they're going to say, What did you see as a failure? It blew up. It exploded. We need to know more about that. You know, if nothing else, for their own process improvement. And it's before Dell calls them and says, "Hey, stuff's blowing up," and then they have to react. I think there's value in you got to try. Now the other trust your supplier and you say, "Hey, we had a failure," and you just package it up and send it back to the vendor. I don't know. Over the last 20, 30 years, there's been so much pressure on suppliers to reduce costs. They barely have engineers to design their systems. They don't have big failure analysis labs anymore. They don't have a bunch of people dealing with giving you an expert report on why their system failed. And there's an inherent conflict of interest. It's like, it's user abuse. You shouldn't have designed it, your system, that way. You didn't send me the circuit board. You sent me one part. It got over voltage. I don't know where the voltage came from. I can't help you.
Right. Well, that's true. We talked about, you know, EOS. What is it?
ESD.
ESD.
I have the board sitting in my hand, and I'm calling them to
electrical
say,
overstress.
Yeah, it's ESD, electrical overstress, or it's a electrostatic discharge.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it is. And I said,
well, they don't know where it came
you
from.
You can tell from here. It goes, oh, it's always that. And like, okay, how about this broken lead that had a fracture? You can see it here. And it was before we had easy access to all these cameras and stuff. So I'm not going to send it to you because you're not going to help me. I'm going to go to another supplier and get something from somebody else. Like, no, never mind. You're just not even trying.
Yeah. Well, it's like I took the Baractor and went to a failure analysis lab that could do a cross section and a dye and do x-rays and polish it down and go, you know, it became obvious. And I don't know if I sent those to the Baractor manufacturer and said, you know, this is a failure. I tried to more convince the internal management that this was a previously damaged component that was put into the product, and that it didn't happen on the line. And, you know, the crazy things that they came up with to explain it, that there was an electrical storm that day. And a lightning strike went through the system and went all through these oscilloscope test systems and measurement systems, and only zapped this little varactor inside the voltage control oscillator, which was about, you know, a quarter inch by a quarter inch big. And I said, no, that just can't happen. But, you know, they want to believe what they want to believe to kind of dismiss, you know,
it's not our fault, man.
Right. So, and then one time, and it's almost fraudulent. Oh, well, it was fraudulent. They said, you know, that the manufacturer, by taking the component off the board, had overheated it. And that there would be required that the customer send back the whole circuit board, which was a huge assembly. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they were just doing everything they could, and eventually they were shut down by the SEC and they're dissolved. Yeah. But it was just a fraudulent. It was just now, amazing.
Part of it is that, you know, the people who are working for our component suppliers. I mean, mm-hmm. I've worked with a good number of them over the years. They're good engineers. Mm-hmm. They're trying to do their best. They're trying to help, you know, gazillion different customers, and they don't get the full picture of what's going on.
Right.
And their limited resources. I don't blame the people that I've worked with at all. I've heard some just silly things and said, you know, that's more of an ignorance problem and company policy problem. But the part of it is that, like the inductors that I was working with, this is, well, mm-hmm. how do you, you know, make sure your system will work? And says, well, since we really don't know where these are used, and we know that some are in computers and some are here, there, and elsewhere, we mm-hmm. just use the international standards to say it'll work under these conditions and under these types of things. And mm-hmm. I said, you know that that's pretty easy to pass. And he says, but our customers look for it on the data sheet. Did we pass all these standards? And some customers will say, will it do this, this, and this? And here's a different test regime or set of requirements. And mm-hmm. we have limited resources to respond to stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, unless it's worth our time to go set up a test rig just for this one sale, we're not mm-hmm. going to do it. And I get it from their point of view. I understand that they're in there's an impossible situation. They can't custom build every verification for every situation, every environment. You just can't.
No.
And we're not paying them to do that.
That's why it's a really good idea for the OEM that's going to build the full system to, if he has a choice of component manufacturers, you know, what we would do is a mixed build, you know, and mm-hmm. and different components have different margins on them. In fact, you never know what a company has to, as far as the margins that are built in to be able to make sure.
On the data sheet.
What's that?
They're not on the data sheet.
No. You know? And they'll never tell you what, you know, what it's really capable of, but there can be significant differences in the same component type and how much margin they have, depending on how much the company has over-designed it, or not over-designed it, but made sure.
Or controlled their variability.
Control the variability, and so that they have more margin so that they can have less dropout or less failures in the final test. And they, you know, the Six Sigma idea that there's plenty of room on either side.
I know you like statistics. I did.
In a crude way, maybe so, Fred. Okay, yes, I do know how to count. So yes,
okay. That's, you're right.
But I think most of reliability is finding the unexpected, the unintended, the unknown when you get the whole assembly together. And because there's so many, besides the design, there's certainly the criticality of the manufacturing process. Yeah. So I mean, you know, and that's another thing that the supplier of all these components can't know is, you know, what the temperature reflow, you know, and they can suggest
our
recommendation, but it's just like the recommendations for user in-use conditions. Mm-hmm. Again, if anybody looked at a standard maximum operating environment for a for any laptop, it usually had the plus 35 degrees C was the top end. Well, yeah, of course, you know, it gets to 40 in many countries and many places. So, you know, it's kind of a pointless thing to put in a spec sometimes, yeah, because there's always margin around it. There's always got to be margin. And that's where you can only find out by usually doing the testing yourself and doing some comparison, and what I call comparative limit analysis, that if one set of components in the board or one power supply has more margin in it, it has a very good probability of being more reliable than others if everything in that manufacturer's supply chain is under control and that you can trust the supplier that he's trusted his suppliers and that they all have some control down the line, all the way down to the, you know,
raw material extraction.
FR4 material, the printed circuit boards, the through hole plating, whatever.
The flame retardant and the epoxy. I had that.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like 5-6 steps away. But it's part of it is that we won't be in business if we don't trust our suppliers. Yet I often advocate that you need to know quite a bit. So when you talk to a supplier, say these inductors, the wire they wind has got a very thin insulator on the wire. And it's in the wrap, those wires are supposed to be separate. If you get a nick or a short between two wires, then the inductance changes because you have a different winding.
Right.
And I'm watching them do it by hand. And there's some fingernails out there. And they go, fingernail nicks are our biggest thing. And why don't you automate this? Because we make 18,000 different ones. We don't have an ability to automate all of this system.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I understand. But it's, if you don't know that that's a source for the thing, for types of failures, and you're assembling your units by hand, you're very likely going to nick that wire if you're not paying attention to your handling of those components.
Mm-hmm.
And even if the supplier did a great job, you could cause the problem, or dielectric or multi-layer ceramic capacitors.
Well, just taking that wire, you know, the manufacturer of the wire who also coats it, has, you know, his goal is not to use as thin a coating. You know, he don't want to spend a lot of money on the coating, just like,
well, it changes gold the plating if it's too much. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of stuff like that.
Right. So they got all kinds of variabilities and how robust or, you know, scratch resistant that hard that coating insulators, is the insulator. Yeah. Very thin. You're right. You can scrape it off easily with just your fingernails. They have their own suppliers of that material. They don't make it. They have to buy it from a chemical manufacturer of some sort and put it on their wire. So they may have an option or may have multi-suppliers.
Oh, yeah.
Multiple suppliers of that.
And it might be a variable on the machine that does it. It's
right.
The idea, though, is that for each of the, you know, like multi-layer ceramics, it's a fraction of a cent. Everybody uses them, but they're a piece of glass. They break.
Glass and metal. Glass and metal. Right.
Yeah. And so it's being aware of how things are made and how things could fail goes a long way into how you design stuff, how you put stuff together, how you manufacture it, and pay attention to not inadvertently causing problems, but also understanding in our environment, will that fragile device work? Or will this thing that inherently is moisture sensitive work in our humid environment?
Right. That kind of loops back to our previous podcast about failure mechanisms, understanding those. So if you're interested, go back and listen to Corey Coyne a few podcasts ago, I think we had that one. But that's important. You have to know material science, manufacturing processes. You have to know auditing techniques that they may use, what they do to monitor their materials incoming.
But pay attention to that. It's not just go, oh, we buy it and it must be good because they're a big company. don't buy that. Yeah. You need to, if it's important, if your label is on the box, it's your fault. The end of the day, the customer's going to call you.
They're going to look at you, right? Not Toshiba about that's the right. diode that's inside your box, but they're going to call.
They're not going to call
HP, the Dells, the
they're going to call the nameplate, and right. so you need to trust but verify. And to verify, you have to have enough knowledge, and sometimes more knowledge than your supplier, so that you can, if that's where you want to buy that product, and they're not up using process control techniques to minimize variability, mm-hmm. you need to teach them that. And I've heard the argument, well, if I teach them that, they'll use it for their competitors. And like, do you have a competitor in mind that you want to go to that does it? You know, they will meet your requirements. Then teach them. It's okay if they use it with everybody. They're a better supplier for you. They have a better business model then. But you can't just keep them in as adversaries and continue to get poor products from them and not do anything about it. It just doesn't make sense to me. I might be wrong, and some MBA will tell me what I did wrong. But the idea is that But pricing's not the only thing, Kurt. I've often heard that from procurement, is that I have to have multiple suppliers for two reasons. One, if one of them has a natural disaster in their plant and they go out and that goes out, I have a supply.
Right.
Assurance of supply makes sense. Two is I want a competitor so I can say, hey, they gave me a fraction of a cent off. You need to give us a fraction of a cent off. The competitive pricing.
Right.
And he says, well, which one of them is actually creating a product that works for our system? Oh, we don't think about that. We're just after price. Okay. We need to talk.
Yeah. That's where you want to, again, get engineering involved and say, which one of these has more margin? Can you, put them in your power supply and see if that's, or, put the power supply and just test it and see what has more margin. That's the only thing I can see doing, other than, you do the, you can do the audits and things, but they'll tell you things. And to me, physics don't lie. The world of vibration and thermal stress just tell you what the real capabilities of the product are beyond the spec.
Yeah,
and the more you have, what's that?
A good oscilloscope, understand your circuit. And why am I getting this weird behavior here? What's going on?
Right, right. So anyway, it's a tough one that when you pick a supplier, you have to believe or trust that the supplier also trusts their own supply chains into their product.
It only goes so far. If you still need to verify, and I think that's the real trick, is that they're good people. They're trying to do their best in impossible circumstances.
Right.
And if it's important to you and your customers, you need to get involved with your supply chain and really understand where your risks are, what you need to do to improve it.
And you always know, in general, your suppliers don't want to create failures and don't want to have, parts
it's not something they want.
Most everybody,
wants to do a good job.
Right. They want to be a good supplier.
And so if you can help them do that, then you both win. Right? That's how I look at it.
Right. That's true.
But Kirk, us as suppliers of knowledge, you can trust us. check the numbers twice, bounce the advice off of somebody else you trust. But
you also have other suppliers of this kind of information. And,
that's right. And we tell you where they are. We list all kinds of shows and all kinds of sites and webinars, podcasts, conferences, everything else. So,
and you do have a variety of people and attitudes on the Speaking of Reliability podcast. Yeah. Me being probably the one that goes against the grain the most.
Well, there's that. Yeah. You had a little grain.
I cut straight to the, it's just a different, I came to in a very different a path to reliability, and that was from the field and working on equipment and setting up equipment, and it's just a different world. But
no, there's nothing wrong with that. And it's a, and it brings a fresh perspective to the conversations and their approach to reliability engineering. And it's
I don't mind. Nothing wrong with that. I'm not gonna change my, I mean, I'm always open to new evidence. Somebody show me and I and they showed me data that supports that. That's great. I'm not saying I'm a closed book about that. It's just, it's my experience in watching this world for, you know, four decades now, at least. I know kind of where it is that the truth lies, what some of the business motivations are behind keeping systems that unfortunately are profitable to the supplier, but not to the customer, being the taxpayer. But other than that, you know, we buy something, you know, knowing either like you have some past history with these suppliers too. And for me, you know, consumer for commercial products that I buy, like the printer we just talked about, I go to Consumer Reports and they do surveys of field and people, customer, mm-hmm. you know, the actual users. And hopefully they're fair. I think they're limited. Maybe they're not as broad, but that's another way that, you know, I can trust a supplier is to reference their, you know, history and their manufacturing consistency.
Yeah. No, it's so anyway. One way you can trust us is if you send us a question or have a comment or something like that, we'll get you an answer or resource or, you know, point you in hopefully the right direction and help get you moving along. And we'll probably put it on one of the future podcasts and make it a question.
Good segue.
Yeah. So, you know, send over your questions or comments, ideas, thoughts, you know, all that good stuff. We'd love to hear from you. And we're at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And you can, Kirk and I and the other hosts are available through LinkedIn and our About pages. So, plenty of ways you can touch with us. We try not to be too hidden away.
Right.
We say this every episode, but we haven't got like 10,000 requests in 1 week yet. It just hasn't happened.
But we do appreciate your feedback and let us know what you want to hear about. I think Fred and I over the 10 years have covered everything I think of we covered, you know, but maybe there's a new subject. There's new technology that's coming up and we haven't heard about or you'd like to discuss.
There's all kinds of stuff. I mean, I don't think we talked about supplier trust before.
We may have.
Indirectly, mostly. We focused on it today. So plenty more topics out there, I'm sure. You remember when we started, Kirk? We thought we'd get like 20 episodes and run out of stuff to talk about.
No, as long as there's I do remember in 2016 when we started this. We'll do a few sessions.
See what happens.
Yeah. Here we are 10 years later and probably 20 or more hours of discussion. Probably more than that.
No, it's been fun, and I'm looking forward to a lot more ideas and comments and questions from the audience so that we keep it going.
We're not finished yet. At least we may be finished for today, but not for a future SOR podcast.
There you go. All right. Thanks, Kirk.
Okay.
We'll let you go.
All right, Fred.
Cheers.
It's good to talk to you.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.